Welcome to Day Zero Update for November 9th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Dan Red Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a big week of news as, let's say, we've got four delays announced this week.
Mm-hmm. One of which is basically just forcing the entire industry to reschedule a bunch of shit.
Yeah. Four games for seemingly a variety of different reasons, but
yep.
Yeah, we got that. We got a bunch of industry news, a new way to find out how much you've played games on a certain platform,
mm-hmm.
For the first time in quite a while, as well as let's say more not great shit is happening in this industry.
Yep.
We'll get to that. But before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here as I've been playing more Power Simulator. I am mm-hmm. on a cool little job right now, setting the carnival area that I'm enjoying a lot. Especially because the achievement for it has you partake in the ride.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that this game works with that kind of stuff, it doesn't work super well. Because
mm-hmm.
this game doesn't like you sitting on things or trying to sit mm-hmm. on things. Because if you put your couch in your little base area and you try and sit on it, you just like slide away.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, nope, we don't allow that, even though we've given you furniture to sit on. But yeah, I am still liking this a lot, still working my way through it. But yeah. Not too much else to say about that. I am nearly done upgrading my second of the medium duty washers. Mm-hmm. So hopefully I'll be able to get one of the higher duty ones that I think are the highest tier here. So looking forward to using those. But yeah, enjoying that a lot. Let's see. Also been playing more Halls of Torment on PS5. As mm-hmm. I finally kind of put in the time to get the new characters in the map that are part of the DLC, the Boglands DLC, working, which is nice. It took a bit because especially one of them was collecting enough of these plants that you need to make new potions.
Mm-hmm.
Which all are just ways of banishing items when you get an option to pick, you know, upgrades or whatever, or refreshing the list, that kind of stuff. So nothing really too complicated there, but I had 5. You can get 2 in each area, and I'd gotten 5, and I need 11. It turns out, at that point, generally unlocking a new mode called Agony Mode, which mm-hmm. is essentially an escalating kind of difficulty mode. It starts at, you know, level 1, and you work your way up to potentially 5 by the end of the run,
mm-hmm.
As it kind of throws more enemies and such at you. That seemed to be where I was going to be able to get more plans for that, so that ended up working out. The map itself is pretty cool, as you would expect. It's a very swampy map.
Mm-hmm.
With the big change from the way every other map works is that you are not starting at 30 minutes, a counter of 30 minutes that counts down. Mm-hmm. It starts at 0 and counts up. It's kind of an S map, essentially, where you're trying to survive as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
The enemies are much tougher than your standard starting enemies. I don't think I killed one on my own till at least a few minutes in. My loadout has items that will have summons come in,
mm-hmm.
skeletons and some other creatures come in, and they did most of the work for me as I sort of explored the map. Has some other cool stuff going on where you find these like little pus balls that you can try to destroy. They take a lot of they have a lot of HP to them, so I don't know that I really blew any of them up until I figured out one of them had like a vein going through the ground that kind of went to this tree that was not mm-hmm. too hard to defeat. but I think I had to go beat that up to then do the other thing. So there's a lot of little secrets like that into this map that is pretty neat. It has a bunch of new enemy types. There's insects, which are mostly all mosquito-looking things that are very creepy. You get, like, zombies and some that are, like, boomers from most of your zombie games. They take a lot of damage, and then once you kind of finish them, they blow up. So they can do damage to you or to other enemies. Bosses are also tough. So I did not last more than like 18 or 19 minutes, something like that, for that. But alongside that map, you get two characters, the Crone and the Alchemist, I think it is. Both of these are kind of very untraditional characters. They're both not offensively minded. They don't do offense directly on their own. Crone essentially causes these plants to grow around her. There can be different kinds of attacks. There's one that like shoots little ammo at enemies, a sort of a ranged attack. There's one that does like melee attack. One that kind of blows up. And I forget what the other one is. Might be one that kind of slows enemies down. So those are, that's interesting. And so you kind of have this very slow character that has these other summons, essentially, or her. I've not played too much with her yet to see what's neat about her character. The Alchemist is kind of similar. Throws these like potion vials at enemies. It'll cause like a little patch of ice or lightning or something that will, you know, cause enemies to take damage as they run over those patches. So that one's kind of a neat idea as well. But yeah, that's pretty cool. I've not played with the Bard, which is the free character as part of the update that came with the DLC. That one requires a little more work, but I'll probably get that here in the next few sessions I have with the game. But yeah, still enjoying this a lot. It's still really well done as I'm starting to unlock more of the deeper parts of the systems and seeing like higher tiered loot that I can't send up yet through the Wellkeeper. So there's some other stuff going on there. But yeah, still enjoying that a lot. Let's see. I've been playing some American Truck Simulator because they still have their Halloween event going on here for a few more days that I'm working on. And the neat thing they've done with this event is that it essentially adds a new area to go to, sort of like the Christmas map. They call this, I think, Brackenreach, which is sort of a spooky Halloween, you know, castle map kind of thing. It's pretty cool. You kind of load into this area to run point and kind of have to go through this like branching spooky forest kind of thing. That's maybe the issue I have with it is that it features a lot of tight corners where, you know, these are giant semi trucks. It's not really their forte of trying to squeeze through areas. So I've had damage done to like my trailer or my truck itself, that kind of thing. That is a little tedious. Luckily for the event itself, you only need to deliver stuff to it three times and from there three times. So you basically deliver something to there and back three times, and then you just deliver Halloween candy elsewhere across the country. And you can do this in Euro Truck or American Truck Sim. So either way works, but it all kind of works pretty well. I would say maybe it would be nice to have a little bit of wider areas to get through. And maybe the other issue or the other neat thing is they have like a bonus objective, which is that the they have like a, oh, you can find this other area of this map that is the a witch's house, which is nice to find. But yeah, kind of getting through the area is kind of pretty tedious, and they do have some cool areas. You kind of go through a cave that has like a dragon skull looking entrance to it, and some of that, but it also has a lot of uneven terrain where my truck was like bouncing around a lot more and kind of taking some extra damage that way.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing that caused it to break or anything, but there's definitely some precarious points where it's like, man, if I drove off this ledge here, I'd be fucked. But luckily I ended up doing okay. So yeah, that's cool. I'm still going to keep working on that and get that finished. I've just put it off until nearly the end of it. So that's kind of what I typically have done with these events. But yeah, let me see. I've also been playing some more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still working my way to unlocking the next area, but for now, that is what I've been playing. I've beaten another stage with the default knight character, but now I'm starting to expand the host area and kind of put some of my buildings off to the side that don't need to, or that can't mm-hmm. be upgraded. But yeah, trying to progress through all this upgraded stuff that I need to. But yeah, enjoying that a lot. And yeah, not really too much else to add there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last game I've been playing some more of is Clair Obscur Expedition 33. I have finished up the second area, the underwater area.
Yeah.
Beat the boss, which wasn't as tough as I was expecting it to be at a certain point. Mm-hmm. Also done a bit of fighting.
Yeah.
There's a side boss that beats that has like a trumpet. That's a real mm-hmm. fucker.
Oh yeah, I remember that guy.
I tried it once, got whooped pretty quickly, and I was like, all right, I'm going to see at an IGN guide just to look for side things I might have missed.
Yeah. Just
catch up that way. And it was like, this one, there's like a couple of tricks to it. And timing is the, you know, the big thing here. They kind of said like how the timing works. And I was like, all right. I still ended up with like one character dying, but otherwise managed to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
That one was tough. There's another side boss. It's, I forget what they call them, but they're essentially these big giant guys that there's like a few of them you can fight. One that's really like a giant off in the distance, but you can like provoke it probably.
Mm-hmm.
I just ignored it. But it managed to swallow up two of my teammates.
Mm-hmm.
Leaving me with one left. Luckily, it was one that could still do big damage.
Yeah.
It was sort of where I was starting to figure out the weird like system for breaking the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
There's like this secondary bar. I didn't realize that you had to use specific moves for that. Mm-hmm. In the description, they do mention it's like, oh, this can break, and shows like a little like twinkle star kind of icon on it. I was like, oh, that's the icon.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was like getting to like 99%, never progressing over it for whatever reason, but
yeah,
I figured that out and dealt with it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm up in the second like open worldish area.
Yep,
basically about to do some side stuff before I go through the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that game still really good.
Oh yeah,
but definitely, despite the areas kind of being pretty linear, they do hide a lot of it in places you may not notice.
Yep. It absolutely does.
I think I got to the area right before the boss in that second area.
Mm.
I was like, oh yeah, there's this grappling point here off in the distance that you may not notice.
Yep.
They get some minor little item and it's like, Jesus, this is ridiculous. And I was pretty sure I did pretty well getting most everything.
Mm.
I was like, oh yeah, back in this mansion, there's like four of these little switches you would not think of as switches unless you like ran up to them.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was like, all right, did that. Though the guide did not do do anything at all to be like, this is where the thing you opened up is. I just wander around for a bit and it's like, oh, there's this tiny hole in this corner.
Mm-hmm.
Would you find like a second music track to play in the camp? But now I have the creepy dude in the camp to do some upgrade stuff, though nothing, I haven't done any real upgrade stuff just yet.
Mm.
Other than using some of the points for the what are the Lumina points? Get some mm-hmm. extra ones for the main crew that I have right now.
Yep.
So it'd sure be nice to upgrade, hold a little more random things to put on there. So yeah, that's been what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I finished Silent Hill 2 last night and got the Maria ending. Now, of course, everybody who's ever played Silent Hill 2 knows that it's one of those games that kind of bears replaying because, you know, the game's got multiple endings. So I'm probably going to go back and do some stuff like that. But yeah, that game just right up to the very end is just really good at, you know, just the sense of atmosphere, just making the whole thing just really tense from beginning to end. Not like the original game wasn't very tense. It absolutely was. But with the remake, they managed to take it to a whole new level. Among other things, the fact that because it's like completely 3D, and like the original Silent Hill 2, it's kind of hard to explain. Part of it has to do with the fact that some of the enemies in this game have abilities that they didn't have in the original. Specifically, the mannequins. There's like a variant of them that they introduce halfway through the game that can actually like climb up walls and drop down from the ceiling on you, which is both terrifying and kind of annoying, I won't lie. And then there's also like where they've got one class of enemy, but there's a whole bunch of them now. What are called the Mandarins, which are like I think in the original, if I remember correctly, you only run into them like a few times, because they're essentially like these things that like, and they usually show up when you're like walking on ground that's made up of like a grating, and they essentially like have like these sticky hands that, you know, they use to hold on to the grating underneath it and attack you. But in the remake, there's a whole area where you basically have to put all of your stuff aside and essentially completely unarmed have to navigate this area while these things are like stalking around the area, like attached to the ceiling and everything. It's really nerve-wracking. But yeah, damn, just like they freaking knocked this damn game out of the park, like genuinely. And what's really odd is, like, if you remember in the original game, like, the English dub that they did, the voice acting was kind of, like, campy and, like, a little detached. In this game, they all legitimately sound like they're dead inside. Until, you know, shit finally snaps, in which case it is very, very unnerving to experience. But yeah, so I finished that. I'll probably go back to that tonight. Also still playing Power Wash Simulator 2. I was still hacking away at the gas station last night. I'm just about finished with it. But on the side, I also did a couple of other sort of minor side jobs, specifically doing a washing off a guy's ATV. Which was, you know, very cut and dry, very simple. The gas station kind of adds some extra layers to it because it's the first job that you encounter in this game that involves, you know, getting rid of graffiti, which adds like a whole different thing to washing all this crap off. And on top of that, on all of that, I'm also playing Celico, which is a game I've talked about a couple times. I've been wanting to play a while. It cost like $25 on Steam. Essentially what it is it's a FPS that was made using not the actual Doom engine, but I think it's called the DRM2, which is like a thing that simulates the Doom engine, but it lets you do stuff that the original Doom engine isn't capable of doing. And it's really damn good. Like, it's so damn good. It's essentially, you're playing this woman who wakes up in this futuristic hospital, nothing really telling you why or who you are or why you're there. And when you're waking up, something or someone is launching an attack on the hospital, and it's basically killing everyone that moves. So you're trying to get around, try to get a weapon, try to get armor on, because, you know, again, it is based around the Doom engine. And you end up encountering all of these enemies that look humanoid. They are all speaking English, but their blood is purple, which is odd. And as you're looking around, you sort of get like an idea of like what this world is, because apparently there seems to be suggestions that we're not on Earth. We might actually be like on Mars or something. But the really big draw to this game is how incredibly intelligent that the enemies in this game are. You cannot play this like a Doom or a Quake game because you will get slaughtered. The enemies are extremely smart. They will dodge. They will track you down. They will, if they hear things, they'll come running to get you. They will dodge in and out of rooms to avoid your fire. If you tried to hide somewhere, they will go around to try and get you, including areas you not know exist yet. And it's really damn good. It's technically in early access, but pretty much the full game is already available. So if that sounds like anything anybody is interested in, give it a shot. It's definitely. So Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, obviously it's been a while since I've been on the show. Played a lot of stuff though, so I'll just go ahead and start with what I'm currently playing. I'm playing Dispatch. I am really looking forward to the way it ends. For those of you who like don't know how it worked, I think press was given like the first four chapters when it first came out. And then PS5 stuff came late, so I didn't get any advanced chapters early. So I've pretty much been playing just as we go here. And you know what? I don't know if I like what I play. Like, you know, the Telltale games are very much in my wheelhouse. But the reason why I don't know if I like what I'm playing is just because it took a little too long for me to get invested. And the main reason why I got invested was because each episode of the game is like 30 minutes long. They're really, really short. You know, the Telltale games and Life is Strange, they were all like 2 hours each episode. These are a whole lot shorter. So, you know, they're definitely a lot easier to take in. So to just talk about what Dispatch is, basically you're this hero Mecha Man who all of a sudden loses his suit, or not loses his suit, but, you know, it's he becomes overpowered and loses a battle. And then all of a sudden he is recruited by this group who is pretty much tasked with dispatching superheroes out to wherever they have to be. So, you know, think of the government in Invincible, and like, that's who you are. You don't actually, you know, do anything special aside from being the person behind the computer. That being said, like, there are a lot of, you know, fun performances here from the voice cast. You know, you have Aaron Paul, you have Laura Bailey, you have Alana Pierce, and yeah, like, all do an excellent job, like, so good to the point where, like, I can't even tell, like, these aren't trained voice actors doing their thing. So yeah, I mean, when you have critical roles help, you're there's definitely going to be a lot of support here, and it's pretty awesome in that regard. That being said, you know, I'm a big Invincible fan. You know, I like superhero stuff in general. I just have a little bit of superhero fatigue, and I don't know if it's that or it's just, you know, I don't really want to learn about any new characters. But one pretty cool thing that it does is the actual stuff that you do behind a computer. And Yeah, like I said, like you're just dispatching certain heroes to help out with some situations, whether it be a cat being stuck in a tree, you know, that basic stuff, or you know, a bank robbery and things like that. And you're tasked with managing the Z team, you know, the worst of the worst, and like you're pretty much also required to like fire somebody on episode two or three. I forget which one it is. But yeah, like it's been enjoyable, like getting to know like the little enemies who came up here trying to make life work. And the cool thing is like they don't know who you used to be, so there's always like that common thing here. And the reason why I'm not a fan, or you know, I'm sort of not liking what I'm playing, is the fact that I don't think the decisions I'm making really are mattering all that much. There is like one pivotal decision you make like in episode two or three. And that's really just based on like having a romantic relationship with, you know, a couple of characters in the game. I don't want to go into exact detail about who these people are because it's really the only decision you make. But like that's my issue here. Whereas with games like The Walking Dead or Life is Strange, oftentimes the last decision you made ended up being the most pivotal one, and you don't really have that sort of thing with Dispatch. That being said, they do a really good job of making about the next episode there. Like it, they do a good job of making it feel like it ended. It doesn't quite hit that anime thing where, you know, oh, the episode's over, you know, god damn it. Like they do a good job making you feel settled with that ending. But yeah, the gameplay loop pretty much revolves around just making decisions, doing the dispatch point, and then there's the whole hacking mechanism where you pretty much have to like solve these unit mazes, puzzles where you have to go from one end to the other, and it's really hard to explain it, but basically you just have to like follow a bunch of keywords on the screen and making sure that you're avoiding other things. Like this is probably like the one thing in the review that I'm gonna have trouble writing because I really have trouble explaining what it is without a video in front of me. But yeah, so Dispatch is solid. Definitely looking forward to the last two episodes coming out this Tuesday. Next up is Goodnight Universe. This one comes out soon. This embargo is Monday, so I'm hoping that where people. But yeah, this one is pretty interesting game. It's in this game you pretty much use a baby, and the baby is smart and it's sort of a psychic. So you pretty much live the way you know a baby is supposed to live. You worry or like just think about the things your parents or the people around you are saying, but at the same time it's like you're smarter than them. And then eventually like you find out that you sort of have an ESP. So you know it kind of feels like what's that one David Cage game, Beyond Two Souls, where all of a sudden like you're just like confusing or taking over things in the background and scaring the people you're with. And yeah, like it has an interesting way to go about it with its gameplay loop. The problem is as you get towards the end, something happens which drastically puts the gameplay to a halt. And what you're doing here is like basically a whole lot of text on the screen, and you're just unhighlighting it because basically it's a whole lot of stuff that the government was hiding, you know, things like that, redacted documents, and you're just like taking off all of the censored stuff. And it does this for about 15 to 30 minutes, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not even playing a game here. Like it's worse than Telltale games as far as like, you know, just trying to go through the motions, and that kind of made it falter for me. That being said, like there's a whole lot of creative choices here. I really enjoyed the game at first. It's just that the pacing kind of just went to hell at the very end. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, not to say exactly what happened, all of a sudden it becomes like sort of a first-person shooter. And I'm like, okay, well, this came out of nowhere. You know, they should have like mixed in more of this. But at the end of the day, it's an obscure game. You know, it's made as a game of art. And yeah, it'll definitely be split in regards to like people, you know, playing it for fun versus playing it for the art of it. And yeah, just going back to the stuff that I'm playing throughout, I played and reviewed Dragon Quest 1 and 2 HD Remaster. These games are absolutely fantastic. The main thing is that there is a lot of bloat. If you've played the original Dragon Quest is like 12 hours. I beat it in about 15 hours for this new one. And yeah, the reason why it's longer is because they've really fleshed out a whole lot of the plot points that you really couldn't do with, you know, the NES, SNES, or Game Boy. For that matter, the one that I played back when I was a kid was the Game Boy Color version. And yeah, like turn-based battle systems have definitely evolved since then. And obviously this sort of takes, this is pretty much just all over again, as far as like, you know, what to expect. I didn't actually expect the game to score as high as it did, just because, like, you know, we saw all this already in Dragon Quest III. But at the same time, I really enjoyed how Square Enix development team and the HD, you know, 2D graphics really lended here. It's easily probably the best HD 2D games that we've played so far. And yeah, I'm hoping that we continue to see more of it. Like we always talk about the random fatigue that comes with different visual styles. I don't think I can ever get tired of HD 2D. I don't know if that's actually possible. That being said, Dragon Quest II, I would say this is probably one of the most unappreciated Dragon Quest games in the series, just because like it honestly bit off a whole lot more than it can chew. The thing with Dragon Quest 1, as opposed to the rest of the series, is that Dragon Quest 1 forces you to use one character. And when you're playing a turn-based game and you're using one character and you're going up to eight people, it kind of changes the way that you play, especially when you think of the way you played Dragon Quest 3 and you had a full party with three. So when you move on to Dragon Quest 2, you all of a sudden go back to that, you know, full party of four again, and it changes gameplay with that dynamic. And that being said, like, if I had to talk about what's really separated Dragon Quest 1 and 2 HD Remastered as opposed to its originals, is that the games got so much harder. Before, it was all about just, you know, making sure that you grinded enough and maybe even grinded too much. But the AI or the CPU in Dragon Quest 1 and 2 were just absolutely unforgiving. There were points in the game where I definitely forced myself to play a Draki Quest, which is the easiest version of the game. And it doesn't necessarily make it easy. It just makes it so you can't die. So in turn, it becomes easy in that regard. But, you know, if you really want to enjoy the story and the Edric Trilogy is probably the best story in all of Dragon Quest, aside from, in my opinion, 5 and 11. And yeah, it's a good way to go. But yeah, Dragon Quest 2 just felt like something special entirely. You know, I don't want to spoil what goes on with 3 or 1, but basically what happens here is the world is pretty much expanded, and you get to a point early on in the game where you're pretty much exploring everything that you explored in Dragon Quest 1. And that, to me, really felt like the way it felt when you went into Kanto when you were playing Pokemon Gold and Silver, because it just, like, doubled the length of the game. And with Dragon Quest 2, they went as far as adding another ending. I'm not going to talk about that too much, but let me put it this way. The original Dragon Quest 2 took around maybe 15, 20 hours to beat. Dragon Quest 2 HD 2D Remaster takes 45 hours to beat. So not only did they add a whole lot of bloat, admittedly, they also really fleshed out a lot of points that really make it more epic than it ever has been. And in turn, really made it one of the most key entries in the series for me. I'm not going to say it's better than 3, but it's damn near close, and it really closes off the Edric Trilogy in a fantastic way. So yeah, like Dragon Quest 1 and 2 HD 2D Remaster definitely hit for me. I did not expect it to, you know, score as highly or higher than 3, but that's exactly what happened. And I'm glad, because Dragon Quest does deserve to, you know, have its monolith with JRPGs. These are the original JRPGs, and I want the Expedition to 33 crowd so much to play this game and realize that, you know, turn-based RPGs never died. You just didn't play them. But yeah, moving on, playing Ghost of Yote. I'm not as far as I'd like to be. I've probably played that game for like 3 hours, and I jumped back into it like on Friday, and I don't know what I'm doing. So I definitely have to dive in some more to and have that be my focus. It might end up being the same thing with Expedition 33, where I just left this game too much. Ninja Gaiden 4, I played early. Lee put out like a 5,000 word review on it, which is fantastic. Read every word. And yeah, like I agree with pretty much everything that he said. I never beat it yet, but I could definitely tell that this game was more platinum than you would expect, and at the same time, it's more Ninja Gaiden than you would expect, because you use a totally different character. And the end result is something that's really, really fun, but at the end of the day, it's hard to really understand what it is. That being said, it's still really, really fun, and probably, you know, I would definitely say it's worth the New Gaiden 4 moniker. I don't know if the situation will change with this series moving forward, but yeah, this is definitely an awesome way to cap off the Year of the Ninja. I've also played a little bit of Keeper. Keeper also came out on Xbox, free on Xbox Game Pass if you have it. And yeah, another fun one from Double Fine, but it's also like unlike anything you've ever played out of Double Fine. Like it plays like a simulator with a whole bunch of like different puzzle elements, and I definitely appreciate that kind of that. And then there's one more thing I'm playing that I can't talk about for a while, so that's pretty much it.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. And first up here is a big update for the PlayStation Portal. Mm-hmm. It now has official customer support that's been in beta for about the past year or so. And yeah, they've done a big update for that stuff. You can stream the games that are on the PlayStation Plus game catalog and classics catalog. Without needing to use, you know, remote play to directly connect your PS5, which is nice. They also allow you to stream games from your PS5 library. So if you've bought a bunch of games, they have a bunch of those, which they have a link to see the full list for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is pretty substantial from what I saw. Yeah, about 2,800 games there. Including some that aren't even out yet, but will be ready for it when they launch. So that's cool to see. They've also done a bunch of UI updates, from what it seems here, to make it easier to know where you're getting your stuff from, screen, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
3D audio support and all that. So. Yeah, that is cool. It has me kind of interested in picking one of these up at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a pretty awesome and substantial update. I will say that, you know, I've had one for more than a year now. I haven't used it as much as I thought I would. However, there were some games streamable that weren't even out yet. I mean, I had them because of early review code. So, like, that's also pretty interesting. But, yeah, definitely a cool update. It might even make you want to consider getting one of these if you don't have a PS5. But at the end of the day, it's cool stuff here. The reason why I don't use it as much as I would like to is because for some reason or another, I don't have the best frame rate or performance when I'm at home. Funny enough, when I play at a place like Florida or like, you know, anywhere not in my house, I get a much better connection, and I can't tell you why, because, you know, it makes no sense, but it is what it is. And it's weird because I had better performance from my backbone at home, but I couldn't use my backbone away from home. So I don't know what's wrong.
Yeah.
Mm.
But yeah, and to be clear, you need a PlayStation Plus Premium for the cloud streaming stuff with that. So, but yeah, if you don't do that, you can still do the remote play
mm-hmm.
locally. Without it, but yeah. So yeah, that seems neat. It has me keeping an eye out on potential Black Friday sales or anything like that, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, that was some cool news to see. Let's see, what else we have here? Yeah, we got some DLC for Atari 50, the mm-hmm. anniversary celebration. It's finally happening, the Namco Legendary Pack. Will be out on the 13th here for $8. It seems like a pretty solid price. It'll add a few games to the collection. Dig Dug, Galaga, Galaxian, Pac-Man, and Xevious
mm-hmm.
for the various platforms they have here. But it'll also add some more interactive timeline stuff with interviews, archival documents, photos, and more stuff like that. But yeah, full list of titles here they have Dig Dug for the 2600, the 5200, the arcade version, the Atari 7800, and the Atari 8-bit version. Galaga for the 7800. Let's see, Galaxian for the 2600, 5200, Atari 8-bit, and Pac-Man for the 2600, 5200, Atari 8-bit, and Xevious for the 7800 and arcade versions. And yeah, I believe the Pac-Man for the 5200 is a new version, I believe. Because the original was a 2600 version. That was pretty bad. But they've gone back and worked on a newer version that should play and look better, much more like the original versus what that 2600 version was back in the day. So yeah, that's a cool additional DLC, and
yeah,
for a very cool collection too. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, there you go. Let's see. We also got first of our delays. Unbeatable was supposed to be out this week, this past week, and sort of hours before the game was supposed to come out, they delayed it to December 9th, saying that. Yeah, here, why would you put out a Q&A basically saying, why would you only tell me now? We say, because the decision was only made a few hours ago.
Yeah. Really,
I'm writing this right after the meeting where the decision was made. We're telling you this as soon as we can.
Mm-hmm.
As for why, QA hit a low repro progression blocker last night that's serious enough it's considered unreleasable. And that fixing this would require pushing the console release date back because of certain timelines.
Yeah.
And not fixing this is, well, we refuse to do that. We're fixing it. So, yeah. As they mentioned, they're going to skip pushing out a month or so here. It means they're going to try to skip past a number of other games that are coming out later in this month or early December, which early December is starting to pile up with releases. So yeah, they're kind of putting it out in a more advantageous position right before Christmas. So hopefully that works out for them, but yeah, kind of wanting to not put it out with a big bug in it that could potentially affect, you know, thousands of people in their audience. Seems like a smart reason to do it. Cause you know, that's kind of stuff that can give the game a reputation for being a broken mess.
Yeah.
That's a shame, but we'll check it out next month then.
Yep.
Yeah, it's definitely rough to hear, especially when you come across something like that at the very last minute. And I mean very last minute. You know, normally you shouldn't be allowed to do something like this, but, you know, given the fact that they're an independent, there is some flexibility here. That being said, like, I found out about this game, like, 3 weeks ago. I wouldn't say I'm excited because I just have so much other stuff to play, but I do want to put some time into it, and I don't know if its new release date is a place where I would definitely want to give it a try from there. I'm, in my opinion, it's being released to die, but hopefully not. We'll see as we move through, but that's at the same time, it's like they didn't pick the best date either. So,
yeah, let's see. We also got a delay for Terminator 2D No Fate, which has basically had dates in every month of this holiday season. It was originally September 5th, then I think October 31st, then November 26th. Now it's been pushed to December 12th. For both physical and digital editions of the title. So yeah. Saying that they need some time to assemble the physical editions. Yeah, the physical components for all editions have now finally arrived following the ongoing delays that pushed us off our previous schedules. However, we have now have to assemble the physical editions, which we need some time to do. We are sincerely sorry for the repeated delays. We don't take your patience for granted, and we never want to disappoint our community. Our goal has always been to deliver the game that you deserve, and we're almost there. So yeah, this was the publisher that wanted to have the physical editions out the same time as digital, which is a reasonable thing to want, but most of these delays seem like they've been dealing with, you know, tariffs and shipments, delays, and all that kind of stuff that is part of a reason why a lot of indie games don't ship day and dates on physical and digital. They kind of get the game out on the on the platforms and then let the physical people wait, which usually they're fine enough to do. So that'll be a few more weeks there. Yeah, more time to go.
But let's be honest, that's not the delay that everybody's talking about.
Yeah. But those are the delays for things we were expecting in the near future.
Yeah.
The big delay of the week was Grand Theft Auto 6 getting delayed from, I think it was May 19th of 2026, somewhere in May, to now November 19th of 2026, saying that, Grand Theft Auto 6 will now release on Thursday, November 19th, 2026. We're sorry for adding additional time to what we realize has been a long wait. These extra months will allow us to finish the game with the level of polish you have come to expect and deserve. We want to thank you again for your patience and support. While the wait is a little longer, we are incredibly excited for players to experience the sprawling state of Leonida and return to modern day Vice City. So yeah, that is quite a bit of a delay. Who knows if it's because they've been too busy trying to bust unions to finish the game, but you know, this has been an unfortunate delay, not surprising in any way. As much as, you know, like Strauss Zelnick at Take Two has been like, oh yeah, we're pretty sure they're gonna hit this thing. And everybody else is like, yeah, sure. but yeah, hopefully they hit this one. We'll see.
What was the release date supposed to be before this one?
May.
Yeah, May.
Okay, yeah, like, first of all, I had no idea it was coming out in May, and I wouldn't have believed it anyway. That being said, like, I was going to say that it's a pretty substantial delay, but May to November, honestly, really isn't that substantial. I guess the one thing of note is that their stock dropped, but usually it's just going to, you know, it's just going to go ahead and pile on again. And you have a delay of this kind of length. Like, I was going to say, if it's more than a year, then there were definitely some problems. If it's like, what, 5-6 months, then yeah, maybe I can go ahead and believe them in regards to the whole thing about polish and whatever it may be. But yeah, like, that being said, like, my, you know, hype meter for Grand Theft Auto 6 wasn't high to begin with. Granted, like, I'm not their target audience, but I do appreciate Grand Theft Auto for what it is. And, you know, whenever Rockstar makes any sort of update on Grand Theft Auto, the internet breaks, right? Like, they control the narrative here. It doesn't matter what we or experts will say about it. This game is going to sell gangbusters no matter how much it costs, no matter what platforms it's on. That being said, like, you know, when they unveiled the first couple trailers, I wasn't horribly impressed just because I didn't feel like it was that much of an upgrade from Grand Theft Auto 5. And considering that we've waited like, what, two, almost three full game generations to get this game, like, yeah, I'm gonna expect a little bit more. That being said, they probably will deliver. This is Rockstar. They as far as Grand Theft Auto, there is no duds. The main thing here, though, is that when you delay a game this much, that just means that a lot of dollars, whether it be salary or advertising or marketing or, you know, continued production, it just means more is going to be used, which means that they're going to expect more once the game actually comes out. So that pretty much fuels the fire for me in regards to the game being more than $100, you know, Grand Theft Auto Online not launching with it coming later, things like that. And the way I look at it is it's an extra few months for these people to not worry about their jobs, because as we've seen, a lot of successful releases have come out and people got laid off anyway. I'm hoping that is not the case with Rockstar, but again, like, this is a company that completely owns the narrative, and hopefully they have the right people riding this ship, because there are a lot of people excited about this, and I hope it works out. And I know that I'll be excited when it actually does come out, but at the same time, like, I am totally happy playing other things too.
So yeah, there's that delay, and then our last delay here, Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra, has been delayed beyond its early 2026 time frame. So now it just does not have any sort of time frame at all. Which is not too surprising. I don't think we've really seen any sort of gameplay out of this, so it's not.
Yeah, we really haven't. A game
that was coming anytime soon.
Yeah.
So yeah, this still feels like a nebulous release here, and also being part of Skydance, which now owns Paramount and all that. I wonder if that feeds into any part of this at all. But yeah, the I wish the developers the best on this, because it certainly is not an easy project to continue to work on, especially even, you know, veterans like Amy Hennig, who's leading this project. And yeah, she has not had much luck in her work post Uncharted.
No, she hasn't, sadly. Basically, every project she's headed up to this point has been canceled for some reason.
Yeah, that being said, has Amy Hennig actually shipped a game since then?
No.
No, sadly, she hasn't.
Yeah. We know exactly how talented she is. We know what kind of a leader she is. But at the same time, it's like she has gone through, you know, the haymaker with all of the bad luck possible. Like, I am somebody that actually touched the Ragnarok Star Wars game that was being worked on, and I liked where it was going. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you got to have... You got to have something, and if you're not going to show your investors anything, that's going to be bad. That being said, you know, like Chris mentioned, they are owned by Skydance, so hopefully there definitely is some capital to go along with it. But you know, unlike my vibes with Grand Theft Auto 6, Marvel 1943 is something that I'm excited for. As a huge Captain America fan, as a huge Black Panther fan, I would love to play, you know, a single player game with an awesome story like this. And oftentimes when you deal with stories in this time frame, they end up being bangers. And yeah, I want to play them. But you know, like you guys said, we haven't seen anything yet. And that's rough. Like, you know, again, Amy Hennig is extremely talented, but you know, the years are definitely ticking upwards, and it's feeling like George R.R. Martin, right? Like, we know that guy is talented too, but he hasn't put out anything. It sucks. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
There's that. Let's get to some more positive news. Particularly that Dispatch seems to have sold over 1 million copies in its first 10 days, which is great to see. I feel like we have not, of any of these kind of Telltale or Telltale-adjacent games, we've not really seen any sort of big numbers out of them in quite a while.
No, but this one ended up being surprisingly popular.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you're talking about Telltale. I don't think even Walking Dead in its heyday, like, reached this amount of attention in the time that Dispatch did. And what's even more impressive is the fact that The Walking Dead was or is a valuable IP, whereas Dispatch is totally something new. And you would think, like I said, with the whole thing of superhero fatigue, that it would affect it too, but it clearly hasn't. I have definitely seen this on all my social media feeds, and it's cool to see.
Yeah. So yeah, that's something I do want to check out. I'll probably wait till they're all out to check it out, and it'll probably be on sale maybe around the holiday season, so that seems like the best point for me. But yeah, that is cool to see. Let's get to some Nintendo news, particularly that they put out a new app on your phone devices that is called the Nintendo Store app. That, along with letting you view the Switch storefront and all that, it also has kind of tucked away in there the ability to view your play activity, particularly for not only the Switch and Switch 2, but also 3DS and Wii U games as well, and sort of making that a neat and comprehensive way to find that stuff more than they've really done in the past. Especially on the Switch, where it's kind of this is vague level of time in your like profile that can easily be kind of messed with and all that. So yeah, I remember checking it out where this is on the app. I think you have to go under your profile. There is right down at the bottom. There's a play activity section that can let you see like recent things you've been playing and sort of tell you the time frame you've been playing them in, amount of hours and days you played them. They can like go through and tell you exactly how much you played in each session, that kind of stuff. You can also see for total time played, which mine are the highest ones I have are the Wii U and 3DS eShops. Because I would just leave my DS on while looking through the eShop when they started having sales and such, kind of just checking that stuff out. Like the Wii U one, I have it over 800 hours. And 550 hours for the 3DS eShop. But for my actual games, I have Fantasy Life at just over 200 hours. Like Animal Crossing's over 100 hours. So not really that much specificity, but, you know, that would be the next thing I would want is just tell me the exact amount of time. Because I clearly can tell you that, but they don't want to. But yeah, that was a cool thing I saw and something you can check out. See where you put all your time into.
Yeah, I haven't really gotten a chance to like check the whole thing out yet. I have downloaded it, but at this point, Nintendo has made so many apps and I'm like, oh, I wish you would just combine them all, but I totally understand why they're making them all separate.
So yeah, there you go. But yeah, speaking of Nintendo, they've also announced their sales numbers, and particularly that the Switch 2 in 4 months has sold just over 10 million copies or 10 million units. In 4 months, which is a big deal. Mario Kart World has sold the vast majority of those, 9.57 million units sold. Donkey Kong Bonanza, pretty just under 3.5 million. It's not a huge size that it's selling well, especially because it seems to be in stock to such a degree that we've not seen for consoles, you know, this early on. Even some of the other ones like the PS4 and the PS5 and all that, like they still had supply issues for a while. But Nintendo seems to have spent a lot of their time getting these produced and have been able to get some impressive numbers here. Because I think they're saying that it's double what the Switch was able to at this point in its own life after its launch. So, is not a huge surprise. The Switch definitely had a lot of issues with that. Back when that launched, so good on Nintendo finding a lot of success in essentially selling people a more powerful Switch to play better looking games and all that. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, again, like there are definitely some misunderstood stats here. Like I think one of them was the whole 84% thing, and that's really just that 84% of Switch 2 owners did own a Switch 1, so you know they upgraded from there. It's not that 84% of Switch 1 owners went to Switch 2, because the numbers wouldn't add up otherwise. But yeah, it also is a testament to the fact that this is what happens when you keep something in stock. You know, maybe it's not in the news because it's not sold out, but people are buying them because they definitely wanted a more powerful Switch, and exclusives matter. So,
So there you go. Let's get to some more bad news, particularly for Rockstar Games, who has said that the 30 or so developers that they laid off last week, who were accused by the Independent Workers Union of Great Britain of union busting, because they were all from the same Discord channel about discussing union stuff. They responded and said, last week we took action against a small number of individuals who were found to be distributing and discussing confidential information in a public forum, a violation of our company policies. This was in no way related to people's right to join a union or engage in union activities. Which seems like they, I don't know what what specifically they were discussing. It seems like they were probably getting busted for talking in a Discord channel for, you know, this unionization, potentially of company information, maybe confidential stuff that was only being discussed in that channel. I don't know. But also very convenient that all of these people were part of that Discord channel. So as much as they want to say it had nothing to do with union stuff, it seems a hell of a coincidence that they were all members of this Discord channel. So yeah, I don't know that I believe them to this degree. It just seems like they found some weaselly language here to shield themselves from further criticism. So we'll see.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't trust them one bit. I absolutely am convinced that it has something to do with the unionization efforts.
Yeah.
Just straight up.
Yeah.
Like, it was so transparent that, I mean, I'm surprised they were able to cobble together an excuse like this.
Yeah, especially that they publicly commented on it further. Typically a rock star thing not to have to follow up on things like that. It's like, oh, we got rid of these people and that's it. But yeah. So there you go. Something to think about with Rockstar. So we got this other bit of news. The Game Awards, who last year did not have any sort of future class editions. It was a program for like rising stars in the video game industry. That they did for a few years there, and then sort of did not talk about it all last year, especially as people were wanting some sort of commentary on the stuff going on in Gaza. It seems like it's also not returning this year, especially in the fact that the section of the website dedicated to the future class has been wiped from the website entirely. Which is a hell of a step to go, but obviously people have archived it so on the Wayback Machine. So yeah, that information can be accessed there, but yeah, definitely not really a great look for this kind of thing. It'd be one thing just be like, oh, we're not, you know, continuing with this, but it seems like the people that were in it were part of a Discord for, I don't know, whatever thing they were doing there. And they just realized it had been abandoned, kind of confirmed with everybody that, you know, nothing had been done. And then probably noticed that the websites had removed it. And yeah, that's not a huge surprise, but just kind of a big bummer for a cool part of the Game Awards for the last few years there during the pandemic. So, yeah, that's a shame and kind of something they should have just continued doing, regardless of whatever weird positions it puts Keeley in.
Yeah, it's definitely a bummer, you know. I'm not going to lie. Like, I would love to be on some sort of list like that. And, like, you know, I would be lying if I didn't say, like, you know, a lot of the stuff I do, like, you know, I would definitely love to be acknowledged. Like who wouldn't, you know, like, but yeah, to taking the selfish part out of it, like, the Game Awards doesn't lose anything by getting rid of a program like this. If anything, like, it loses a lot by getting rid of it in the first place. And, like, that's unfortunate because there aren't enough platforms to really uplift gamers or gaming as a whole. I get that this whole thing is a celebration of games to begin with, but at the same time, it's like you definitely also want to celebrate marginalized things in the industry. And that's obviously something that Keeley has tried to do, especially looking back at things like SGF, where he promotes the games that were, you know, made by one person or whoever it may be. Last year, they didn't have, at least from what I've been told, they didn't have the future class because they wanted to focus on that lifetime award that was awarded to Amir Sattvaat, you know, the guy on LinkedIn who pretty much led the effort to try to get people laid off in gaming another spot in the industry. And yeah, he was totally deserving of that. And you know, if I was on like the panel, I would totally agree with the reasoning behind not doing a future class for 1 year. But like that being said, like as I mentioned, there are a whole lot of causes, there are a whole lot of gamers that really put gaming in a really positive light, and it would definitely benefit the Game Awards, especially when he's going to spend so much time like going through rapid fire categories and things like that to promote things that don't make any sense or are obviously there for an ad. Like, you know, the Game Awards is probably like the number one thing now in regards to creating hype for more games in the future. But at the same time, like, I do think there is more room to really celebrate the industry as a whole. Like, looking at the people on Discord and what they were complaining about, yeah, it's totally valid. You know, if you're going to put some of the most outspoken people in the industry who actually promote positivity in one Discord and then all of a sudden alienate them, that's not good. You know, I definitely do have some friends who are on the future class. I worked with one directly as a part mm-hmm. of EA when they did 2 years ago, and I asked him like how cool it was, and he said while it was an honor, they didn't actually pay for anything. They gave him a discount on a ticket, which is not ideal. And you know, with us, like, you know, we're press, right? Like I went to SGF like for free. It's not the same thing with the Game Awards, and I don't know why. If you try to apply as press, they'll tell you, oh yeah, we don't have any seats. But then if you go on their website, they are not sold out. And the reason why they are not sold out is because they are really, really expensive. Like tickets to the Game Awards, over $300 for a really good seat. And there are times where I'll pay it. Like, for example, this might be a year just because like I really want to see Expedition 33 and Donkey Kong Bonanza performed in the orchestra. But you know, like, I'm a one-tenner. There's plenty of people who don't understand why you'd want to pay to go to a thing like this, and it's really unfortunate.
Yeah. So yeah, that's your update on the Game Awards. So that thing is still happening for next month. So we'll probably be co-streaming it to tell what's going on there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for now. That's your update on the Game Awards.
Yep.
Let's see here. We got some Square Enix news. First off, they are laying off a bunch of people as part of their restructuring. They have this big plan that seems like they're shifting a lot of their publishing business and such to Japan. And so these are a lot of people in the UK and the US who are currently being notified of their pending redundancies. The exact number is not known. It seems like about 137 jobs are presently at risk in the UK that may grow, but yeah, that seems to be part of their plan that they have announced a few months ago when they're sort of restructuring and doing all that. So this is part of that. And yeah, that is sad to see, not surprising at all. They've kind of gotten rid of most of their Western studios.
Yep.
For all that stuff. So, yeah, there's that. And then I'll just bring into the other thing here, which is that part of this plan also seems to be probably shrinking their QA teams because they plan to offload 70% of their QA and debugging work to be done by AI by 2027.
Yeah, that is totally not something that is going to blow up in their face in the future.
Yeah. Especially because, you know, a lot of QA definitely requires a human that understands what exactly they are looking at and what sort of things they are expecting to be happening here.
Mm-hmm.
Kotaku article here highlights somebody on Twitter who has worked in QA and sort of shows a lot of the sort of specificity in a lot of this stuff, how you need to be able to look at this with a bit more thought to it, that, you know, AI is not going to We'll see, but yeah, this definitely does not seem like a foolproof plan. We'll see, especially as, you know, they get games tested out through that program. Yeah, that seems like something that is going to result in a lot of people in QA even harder to make up for AI with, you know, potentially false reports and whatnot. So yeah, there you go. That's your Square Enix news of the week, and both are not great. So yeah, there you go.
I'm telling you, it's gonna bite them in the ass later on.
Yeah.
Mark my words.
Yeah. But yeah, let's see here. We're gonna end on a bit of a lighter note. The Video Game History Foundation has posted about their archival of some MLB Slugfest 2003 like audio and documents and such that show a bunch of unused voice lines from the game that were rejected by the MLB, some for very obvious reasons, some of which for things that probably age even worse than maybe it did back then. They have a doc here of disapproved audio. It has a bunch of funny and kind of mean jokes in here. And some interesting ways. Some of the stuff that definitely doesn't hold up. There's a lot of uses of the word sissy and stuff like that. But yeah, let's see here. Let me see. Where is this at? Yeah, Jimmy, did I tell you that they keyed my new beer 6 times this week? Ended up hiring a sniper service I saw advertised in Soldier of Fortune. Let's see. Enjoying some smoked whale meat up here in the booth today. I don't really care for it, but I can't stop eating it. They do have a video with a bunch of the voice lines in there for it. So you can peruse the CD on their website. As well as the documents for that stuff. Let's see. Tim, we want to say get well to our audio man, Bob Slawman. Bob, you may recall, was electrocuted 2 days ago here in the booth. He's listening to us from the hospital. And Tim, he just went up in flames. So that was quite a show. Let's see. Yeah. Here's one guy saying, Tim, have you ever wondered if this booth could just collapse and kill the both of us? Jimmy, it's all I think about. So yeah, there's a lot of good stuff about violence and all that. So yeah, definitely watch some of the video stuff they have. But yeah, it makes sense why some of this stuff wouldn't go through. But yeah, there's also some of the cool stuff that it would be cool to see from more of these games of this type that, you know, a lot of content is made for games that don't release, and it would be nice to see some more of that and get a better idea of sort of all the work that kind of goes in, because you just see sort of the end product and maybe don't always realize how much more stuff was made for it that just ends up getting cut for various reasons, especially in this kind of case where, you know, the MLB company decided, like, no, we don't want these super violent or super sexist. Just, I'm sure the ones that made it into it are plenty violent sexist, so yeah. There you go. Some fun stuff to check out there, along with everything else the VGHF has in their archives, so still some fun stuff there. But yeah, I think it's going to end up doing it for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and games to talk about as we kind of quickly run it fast into the holiday season here. Because Thanksgiving is like 2 weeks away. And that's weird.
Yeah.
It feels like it was 2 months away not long ago. And now it's right here. So yeah. That is going to end up doing it. Double checking what we might have out this week. Good Night Universe, Luminous Arise, Possessors, Rue Valley, Winter Burrow, Gigasword, Inazuma 11, Victory Road, PUBG Battlegrounds for PS5 and Xbox, Ren Sport, Yakuza Kiwami 1 and 2 for the Switch 2, Call of Duty Black Ops 7, and Where Winds Meet. The other one, Escape from Tarkov on PC.
Mm-hmm.
So, bunch of stuff coming out this week. Things to keep an eye on. Thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check out the podcast and select strangers that are also interested in the things coming out here in the near future, as the holiday season is about to overwhelm us, and Black Friday sales that are kind of already happening, but also not happening just yet.
Yeah.
Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.
See you.